It's always been ours. It's time to settle any question about it. She bit the corner of her lip.
That might be a little trickier if the King of Islandia will not willingly cede the lands to you. He is still the sitting monarch.
We'll persuade him, I said.
By lawful means, I assume?
Whose laws, I wanted to ask. I had Raka and antelope blood in mind, but I answered, of course. Maybe the persuading would be better left to us, the king said, as if he had read my mind. And considering the longer Ballinger history of stewardship of the land, it shouldn't be hard to argue for its return into your hands. The queen nodded.
Very well, then. If the other kingdoms are in agreement, Tor's Watch will become the 13th kingdom.
The first, I corrected. The queen's eyes narrowed, but I saw a glimmer behind them. She was amused by this.
You are trouble, just as Casimira warned me.
She sighed.
Very well, then. The first.
She said they would put me up in quarters tonight, have papers for me to sign in the morning, and then I could leave. I would hear from them in several weeks. A delivery of Valspray and a trainer for them would be made to aid in communications. For now, they would provide me with supplies for my trip home, and an escort if I required one.
You're free to go.
Go? Just walk out the door and not look back? I looked at Cassie. She was a rigid soldier, her gaze fixed on an empty wall, but her hands were fists at her sides. I had just gained everything my father had ever dreamed of, what generations of Ballingers had dreamed of, the acknowledgement of all the kingdoms that would establish our authority once and for all. We would be a recognized nation ourselves. And yet I stood there, unable to leave. I should have felt light with victory, but instead a heavy weight pulled at me. I looked back at the queen. Thank you, I said. I knew I had been dismissed, but I still stood there. The queen looked at me oddly, as if she noticed my hesitation. She glanced at Cassie, then back at me. Her eyes suddenly turned sharp again.
On second thought, said the queen, it would be the height of foolishness to strike a bargain with a band of outlaws. I'm not sure I can really trust you, Jace Ballinger. You might revert to your old lawless ways. What do you think, King Jackson?
He looked startled for a moment, then answered, I completely agree. He stepped close to his wife, shaking his head disapprovingly. I don't trust him. Look at that smirk of his. I don't think it's safe to let him go. Was this the trick they'd been planning all along? My blood raced.
What? Though I could send a trusted representative along to keep an eye on you, the queen suggested. An ambassador of sorts? What do you think, Petre? Do you think I should trust you?
I stared at her, the air punched out of me. But then, the glimmer again. I saw the glimmer in her eyes, and it struck me. I understood what she was doing.
Chapter 61. Cassie.
The queen made me no promises. She had listened carefully to everything I told her, and I watched her expressions change as I spoke. Sometimes I saw anger, surprise, confusion, and sometimes I saw sadness, or maybe I was only seeing myself reflected in her eyes. I kept to the facts, only telling her things that pertained to the kingdoms and what I observed. I didn't tell her about Jace and me together. Nothing about the wilderness, because that was a story that would take me a lifetime to tell. When I finished, she told me she would consider everything I said, including what I had boldly asked for, but she had to see the prisoner for herself. She had to speak to him, look him in the eye, get a sense of who he really was, and then she would decide. But she sped up the process, calling him to the receiving hall immediately. I was right behind the queen in the passage as she walked to address Jace, but just before entering, I stopped and pressed myself up against the wall. I couldn't go in. I couldn't face him. I'd heard his angry shouts echoing down the hallway, his resentment and bitterness. There were some things I could try to make right for him, but some things would be forever broken. Kazimira, the queen called. Is this the prisoner you told me about? I had no choice but to enter the room. I pushed away from the wall and created composure where there was none, molding my dread and regret into one step and then another, calling upon old tricks, fooling myself one more time that I could do this. Juggle, Cassie. Pivot. But there was nothing left to juggle. No more directions to turn. Yes, Your Majesty. It's him. I fixed my eyes on the far wall, listening to the charges, waiting. It felt like giant hands pressed down on my shoulders, like every one of my bones was about to crack under the strain. I wasn't sure how much longer I could stand, but after only a few minutes, I knew. I heard it in her voice. It was firm and familiar, a voice I had first heard 6 years ago when I spit in her face. Bring her along to the sanctum. Back then, I couldn't hear the compassion in her voice. I was too frightened, too angry. But I heard it now, and I wondered if this was another one of those things you could only perceive from a distance. I watched her closely as she listened to him tell the Ballinger history, gauging and interpreting her every move and blink. I knew she heard the pride in his voice, the determination, and the responsibility he bore. She was seeing all the same things in Jace that I saw, who he really was, and everything he could still be. It was all going well, better than I could have hoped. Tor's watch was to be recognized for what it was, the first realm of the land. I took a chance and looked at Jace. He was leaving. He was going back. It was what I had wanted, what I had hoped for, because Hell's Mouth did need him. His family needed him. But then he looked at me, and my mind became a windstorm, memories whirling in a riotous tunnel, and I saw it all sweeping away, out of my reach. Then the path suddenly veered terribly, and everything spun out of control, the storm exploding right in the middle of the receiving hall. My head pounded, trying to quickly retrace where it all went wrong. I'm not sure I can really trust you, Jace Ballinger. I don't think it's safe to let him go. What do you think, Patre? Do you think I should trust you? I was frozen, afraid to move, my eyes locked on his, my breath trapped in my chest, waiting for Jace's reply. Say yes, Jace. Tell her. Tell her you'll keep your word. But instead, he hesitated. Tell her. He looked back at the queen.
No, he answered. I don't think you can trust me at all. I might slip back into my old habits.
What was he saying? Had they all gone mad?
That's just what I thought, the queen replied. I'm afraid I'd need someone who was equal to your sly ways. Someone clever enough to keep you in line. Someone already familiar with Tor's watch.
The queen looked up at me.
What about you, Kazimira? Would you be willing to take on this position? Would you be willing to go back with the Patre?
I looked at her, trying to grasp what she was saying. Go back? The room bloomed with stifling heat. The air sucked out in a sudden whoosh. Ambassador? She didn't understand.
I'm afraid, Your Majesty, that would be impossible. I've left considerable ill feelings behind me in Tor's watch. I wouldn't be a wise choice for a liaison.
I looked at Jace, my eyes stinging.
And I'm sure the Patre wouldn't want me to go back with him. Everyone there despises me by now.
There was a long, fragile silence. Then Jace shook his head.
Not everyone.
He crossed the room, and no one tried to stop him.
He walked up the steps and looked down at me, his eyes searching mine, and then he pulled me into his arms, crushing me, his face nestled in my hair.
"I already told you," he whispered in my ear, "and I won't take it back. I love you, Kazi of Bright Mist, and I will never stop loving you, not through a thousand tomorrows. Come back with me, please."
My face buried in his shoulder, breath jumping in my throat. "Make a wish. One will always come true." My fingers curled into his shirt, holding on to what I had thought was far beyond my reach, trying to understand what was happening. And then words tumbled from my mouth, words I didn't want to hold back any longer, no matter how risky they might be. I didn't care if every god in the heavens was listening. "Lepaviena," I gasped. "I love you, Jace Ballinger."
"I know," he said. "I've always known."
I turned my face to his, and our lips met, a kiss that was salty with tears. "My tomorrows are yours, Jace. I want them all to be with you." We held on to each other, tight, as if weaving some solid part of us together so nothing could ever separate us again. And when we finally parted, there was no one left in the room but us, and I guessed the queen knew that my answer to her was yes. Jace helped me with Mija's saddle and pack. This time, on our trek across the wilderness together, we would have ample supplies and boots on our feet. We had already said goodbye to the queen and king, and Jace had signed the necessary papers to begin the process of Tor's Watch becoming a recognized nation on the continent. He buckled the strap on my bag.
"So does this mean I have to call you Ambassador Brightmist now?" he asked.
"Or perhaps Magistrate Brightmist," I answered. "I think that is the queen's intention." He pulled me into his arms.
"I'll definitely be misbehaving, just to make sure you have something to report. I wouldn't want you to lose your job."
We kissed again, like it was all delicate and new and wondrous, a turn neither of us saw coming, and I knew I would fiercely fight to stay on this path, no matter what it took or what it cost me.
"Stop, would you?"
Sinove called. Jace and I stepped apart as she and Ren walked over. Sinove held up a small package tied with twine.
"Just a little goodbye treat for the trail."
"I'm not sure there's room for one more thing," I said.
"Trust me, you'll appreciate it once you're out there in the middle of nowhere."
"I'll find room," Jace offered and took it from me.
When he turned his back, Sinove made all kinds of suggestive eye signals. Ren only rolled hers. I wished they could come back to Tor's Watch too, but the queen had another mission for them once they had rested. I also suspected she wanted to spend some time with Sinove to review how Bar met his fate. It was already becoming legend throughout the settlement. Ren shifted on her feet, hissed, pulled out her zeath, spun it, and shoved it back in its scabbard. She shook her head.
"You sure about this? Who will have your back?"
"I'll be fine," I answered, though I was still uneasy too. I knew Ren had heard the same deadly threats I had in those first hours after we had taken Jace and the prisoners. His family had been quite articulate in their rage. No doubt the whole town held similar thoughts by now too. I would be a prime target. Jace finished stuffing the package in my bag and turned around.
"I'll have her back. And I promise you, once I tell my family everything, they'll be grateful to Kazi."
Jace told me Bar and Sarva admitted to him they planned to kill the whole family, taunting him with some of the ugly details, especially regarding his sisters and mother. It had prompted their last scuffle. Once they no longer had a use for Jace, provoking him brought them sick pleasure. Ren still looked unconvinced, but she nodded. Sinove leaned up unexpectedly and kissed Jace's cheek. "Give that to Mason for me, will you?" she chirped. "I know he must be missing me terribly by now. Let him know I got here, okay? It will be such a relief for him." Jace couldn't suppress a grin, and maybe a bit of an eye roll. We'd heard Mason's threats, too, not to mention we'd only seen him grudgingly tolerate her attentions in the first place.
"I'll let him know."
We stood there awkwardly, none of us wanting to say goodbye. I shrugged. "Then I guess this is it."
"No,"
Sinove said and winked. "It comes later." Ren jabbed her with her elbow, then hugged me. Sinove joined in.
"Blink last,"
Sinove whispered before she let me go.
"Always," I answered.
"Remember, Patre," Ren warned as they walked away. "Watch her back, or we'll come after yours."
Late afternoon, we stopped at a spring to water the horses and to rest. We'd been estimating how long it would take us to get back to Tor's Watch. 3 to 4 weeks at minimum, depending on the weather. The crispness of autumn nipped the air.
"First thing I need to do when I get home is to make amends with Jelaine and put her back on at the arena," Jace said. "She loves her job, even if she complains about it."
He paused and looked at the ring on my finger as I filled a waterskin. The gold glinted in the sun.
"And you'll need to take that off before we get back."
"This?" I spun the ring on my finger. "Why?"
"You think it's wise to wear something you stole from the king? Especially when we want him in a congenial mood toward us when he receives the proposal."
"What are you talking about? I already told you, I got this fairly." I explained about the merchant who gave it to me in return for a riddle. Jace corked his water skin and lay down on the shady patch of grass beside the spring. He folded his hands behind his head.
"My mistake. Garvin told me he thought you had nicked something from the king, and I assumed..."
"Well, actually, I did," I admitted and sat down beside him. "But it was only a piece of paper with a name on it, maybe a pig iron dealer. I think Paxton may have given it to him. Devereaux something?" Jace turned his head like he didn't hear me correctly.
"What?"
"Devereaux 72, that's all it said." He sat up.
"Devereaux, you're sure?"
"Why, do you know him?" And that was when he told me about Zane. Everything about Zane. That he'd been a Ballinger employee. About the setup and Gunner bringing me to the fountain to see if Zane recognized me. About the interrogation that followed. That was how Gunner was able to bring him out to me so fast that night. They had been holding him prisoner in the warehouse.
"That's why I didn't tell you right away, Cassie. I was trying to find the right words and timing once I knew for sure he was the same man you described. I was afraid I'd lose you if you knew he'd been our employee."
It took me a minute to absorb this revelation. An employee, but now their prisoner. He would still be at Tor's Watch when we got there. "You're sure Zane said the man who gave him money was named Devereaux too?" I finally asked. Jace nodded. We discussed what this might mean. Was the man who gave Zane money for labor hunters the same man named on the king's slip of paper, the paper Paxton may have given to him? Just who did Devereaux work for? These past weeks, someone had been campaigning to oust the Ballingers. There were 5 leagues who'd had run-ins with Jace's family over the years, all of them hungry for control of Hell's Mouth and the very profitable arena. Devereaux likely worked for one of them, and now the finger was pointing at Paxton.
"Maybe Devereaux is Paxton's new hawker by day,"
Jace wondered aloud.
"And by night, he's taking care of another kind of business."
"What about the king?" I asked. "I did find the note on him. Could Devereaux be his man?" Jace frowned.
"Not the king I know. I think Montague would wet himself if he ever ran into someone who frequents dark alleys, never mind have the guts to hire him. And for what? He doesn't head a league. He's a farmer. He has no stake in this game. And then we both wondered about Beaufort. Was it possible he had been working with one of the leagues? Having them undermine the Ballinger's foothold in town in return for a piece of the pie? Was Zane their go-between? Or was the scheming unrelated? One conspiring faction? Or two separate ones? Paxton's threat to me resurfaced. Crossing the wrong person can get you into more trouble than you bargained for. Watch your step. Jace shook his head, thinking. I knew it burned in him that he wasn't home.
Last time I was away, Gunner managed everything well, he finally said. He will this time too. And we still have Zane in custody. My family won't let him go. We'll get more answers out of him when we get back.
He squeezed my hand. And we'll get your answers too, Cassie. That comes first.
I'm sorry for what Gunner did.
I glanced down, remembering Gunner's taunts. Emotions were strung tight and he was afraid for you, I replied, trying to understand. But Gunner's cruelty was still a raw wound inside me. He dangled Zane in front of me like food to a starving animal, then snatched him away. I'd been worried about the family forgiving me, but now I wondered if I would ever be able to forgive Gunner. We'll get your answers too. The thought chilled me. What if I was wrong? What if my mother wasn't dead? What if death had tricked me? Jace looked at me, his eyes dark with concern. I blew out a long, cleansing breath. Don't worry, we'll figure it out, I said. But this time there will be no secrets between us, and we'll be working on the same side. He smiled.
The Ballinger odds have just doubled.
He nudged my shoulder until I was lying back on the grass, and he kissed my cheek.
Before I forget, I still owe you something.
What's that? I asked.
The riddle I promised you. The good one. It took me a while. Turns out it's not that easy to find the right words.
He lifted my hand, kissing my fingertips as if he cherished each one.
But sometimes you need to say what is in your heart while you can, because you might not get a chance later. Every word is as true as I can make it, Cassie, so I may as well tell you now.
He pulled his shirt loose from his trousers. Chase, I said, just what are you—
Shh, he whispered. Wait.
He took my hand and slipped it beneath the fabric, pressing it flat to his chest. His skin was hot under my palm, and I felt the light beat of his heart beneath my fingers.
Ready? He asked. Listen carefully, because I won't repeat myself, Ambassador Brightmist.
I smiled. Don't worry, Patre. I'm a good listener. He began, still pressing my hand to his chest.
I have no mouth, but my hunger is fed. With glimpse and touch and kindness set. I have no eyes, but see a soul. The only one that makes me whole. I swell beneath a soldier's palm. Its touch my breath, my blood, my calm. I am utterly lost, but completely found. Captured, taken. A prisoner bound.
My throat ached. I knew the answer, but I played the game. A key? The wind? A map? His lips brushed mine between each wrong guess. It may take me a while to figure this out, I said. His mouth was warm against mine, his tongue gentle, his hands curling through my hair.
Take as long as you like.
We were in no hurry. We were alone, we had each other, and we had a whole wilderness ahead of us.
Chapter 62. The bird was dead. He'd seen it fall from the sky. A dozen arrows had followed its flight. One had found its mark in the bird's breast. He scooped it up with his bony fingers and cradled the bird. Its neck was broken, and its head fell back in an elegant swoon over his arm. He already knew what the note attached to its leg said. He'd stood behind Jelaine as she wrote it. "Jace, Cassie, anyone, come. Please, Samuel is dead. They're banging the door. I have to..." He'd known she wouldn't have time to finish the note. She had barely had time to release the bird. He looked down to where the arrow pierced its stained breast. He gripped the shaft and pulled it from the bird. A spray of downy white feathers floated to the ground. He didn't know if it would help, but he had promised Jelaine, and he always kept his promises. He lifted the bird to his mouth and whispered against the feathers, "Not yet. Not today." Then threw the bird into the air. Its wings snapped taut, catching the current, and it flew away from Tor's watch.
This is Carissa Vacker. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Dance of Thieves by Mary E. Pearson. The part of Cassie was read by Carissa Vacker. The part of Jace was read by James Patrick Cronin. And the quoted texts were read by Anne Marie Lee. This program was directed by Bruce Mann, executive producer Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2018 by Mary E. Pearson. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.